need to engage on it. Am I right?
Not sure. We're trying just to point out in the document that the areas where we refer to payment, it is there in the bill, and maybe to the extent that there may be somewhere where it's omitted, then we can then also just correct that.
So is it agreed then with yourself, Honourable Hilde?
Yeah, Chair, I see it later on. Thank you very much to the Stand Law Advisor for pointing it out later on in the A-list. I just wonder whether it shouldn't be in the section that deals with the functions of the Commission. So, but they'll think about that and possibly add it in.
Make it, logical to have it right. You know, if you're dealing with functions, shouldn't it be pretty much up front? But, I mean, you know, we're always guided by the State Law Advisor, aren't we? And hopefully not in the wrong direction.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Maybe for the... It is there. So, but in order for clarity, maybe we can consider having it maybe in the functions as well. But it is there. It's covered in the text of the current Act as well. The Act, Principal Act as is, as pointed out by Advocate Stadium.
I must say, it reminds me of a rural story I once heard. You know, when you're looking for someone says it is there. It's like looking for a needle in a haystack. It is there. But I don't know how long it's going to take you to find it. You know, so of course, but we're all sensible people, aren't we? So there we are. Oh, back to you, DDGs.
Okay, Chair, I just wanted to say that we will consider that. But just for practical reasons, that a process of paying is just like any other operational function. If we start detailing that one in the functions, then, you know, we might now leave others. But I think in the relevant areas, it is there, to be very clear. So I would propose that we keep it in the form that it is right now, if it's okay, Honourable Member.
Seems to be quite an amicable arrangement at the moment. Eh? So no doubt we're now all on track. We're making very good progress, I'm informed by the Honourable Kwabaso. He said it reminds me of how effectively he chairs the committee. No, not at all. That has got to be the humblest man I know. He certainly wouldn't dream of making such a statement. But may I just point out that, you know, some of you may not be aware, we've got three members writing top London university exams. And, you know, we've dragged them in here to complete a section of the bill, and the next thing I know, he won't get his distinction. So what we've got to try and do is to just refocus for one moment. I'm looking at the DA now, and, you know, Freedom Front as well as Cope. I just want to take those two areas, and I think Jordan, Honourable Hill Lewis, you will remember which ones I'm dealing with there. Those were the ones dealing with the state organ. Do you remember that? The organ of state. DTI, would you be, DDG and Advocate Stratum, would you be on track, Chief Director? If we just move to that for a moment. Can we do that? Would you be on track then, Honourable Kwabaso, as well? And then refer to, of course, our red list, the Lab 18, the one we're working with. Just refer us to the page here, and let's just deal with that. All right? Thank you.
Madam Chair, what I said right at the outset, that if we focus on all the reds, we will get to all the fundamental issues. Apologies. Save for this one. This one would not be coming from the Reds. But it, needless to say, it is part of the A-list, but in black. But allow me, Madam Chair, to refer to it in the bill. Page 10 of the bill. Line 24. The proposal in the A-list is that the 2 years that we find there should be substituted with 8. And I won't be saying anything, Madam Chair. This is a matter of policy, but just within the legal context and within the ambit and the structure of the bill that we're dealing with, I humbly submit that we cannot look at the two in isolation as it stands there. Because this provision says, without repeating what we've done yesterday, on such terms and conditions as the minister deems appropriate, and then the very important part, including such conditions as stipulated in section 14.1. Now 14.1 is on page 11 of our bill, starting from line 2, and that says explicitly that a license granted in terms of section 13 or 13A, which is this license in the new 13A(1), shall be in writing, shall specify the conditions attached to it, nothing is discretionary, and shall be granted for a period not exceeding 8 years. So there it is already. So that's why we apologized yesterday in saying that the 2 is already inconsistent with the 8 that we have in 14.1. That makes it mandatory for the period to be 8 years. And it goes beyond that. It says, and the minister may, after consultation with the board, and at least 1 year before the expiry of that license, extend that license for a non-renewable period not exceeding 24 months. So eventually the period can actually be 10 years. I'm leaving it there, but all that I'm asking, Madam Chair, is we should not reflect on the 2 years in isolation. It must be read with what we're having already there in the bill at the top of page 11, making the period of 8 years mandatory.
DDG, do you want to just add anything succinctly from yesterday? There are a couple of new members here.
Thank you, Chair. I think just to say what we've said yesterday, the proposal needed to deal with an instance where an enabling provision is inserted in the legislation to allow for the state to run the lottery through an organ of state if it deems it necessary to do so, having regard to certain conditions or grounds that would invoke that. And then secondly, we also wanted to clarify a situation where a temporary arrangement can be made in the event where there's issues of revocation of a license or any interruption for whatever reason that might be necessary. And Chair, we've indicated that if we look at the policy, the document, the circumstances were intended to be in the two-way that Advocate Stradom has already alluded to, also in relation to the terms, and we said that we'll leave it to the committee then to consider the issue.
Very much, DDG. Yes, Honourable Hill Lewis.
Chair, I think it will be useful to just restate the core points of my argument, because I don't actually think that they've been adequately responded to. Firstly, with respect, I do think we have to separate the two situations. The argument has always been made that this is needed as a stopgap in cases where there was a revocation of license, or where at the time for the renewal of license or the issuing of a new license, there was no suitable licensee that could be found. It has not, with respect, been argued in this committee that we want a state-run lotto. But yesterday, the DDG referred to a policy document which apparently did make that argument. I must say, Chair, I went to my office, I have a folder dealing with everything to do with the lotto bill. I cannot find that policy document, and I've never read it. So I read it very briefly online, but nevertheless, even if the argument was made in that document, it's never been made in this committee. The idea was always for if a suitable licensee could not be found or if there was a revocation of license, and on that basis we could support it. But I cannot accept the argument that we want a state-run lotto. I don't see what the benefit of that is to the South African public. If you say to me, as you did argue yesterday, that there were certain things which the private sector providers were operators were failing to do, like the transfer of skills, the procurement of local equipment and products, you can fix that very easily in the license conditions. And we've put some of those conditions into the bill. There must be a suitable local transfer of skills. There must be suitable local procurement of technology, all of that kind of thing. Compliance with BBBEE legislation. So, they were just conferring. The point I'm making is that the arguments presented for a state-run lotto can easily, those problems can easily be addressed in license conditions. There's no need for a state organ to run the lotto for a period of effectively 10 years, which is what this bill allows at the moment. 8 years for the license with a renewable period of 2 years in section 14. Thanks, Chair.
No, thank you very much. You know, I do have the policy, Lotteries Policy Review.
I have it now as well.
Why do you have it now, though?
I've got it online. I found it online.
Oh, how helpful. I mean, and you are very au fait with the IT, aren't you? Great. We do have a policy, of course, of also sending this out to members, as you know, so, you know, we're all aware of that. I must say I do have it in front of me myself, and that point is made quite clearly here, quite clearly itself. It could have been that, look, quite frankly, we may have been so focused on other issues, challenging issues, such as the proactive approach, etc. But during the briefings, etc., we did get this allusion to this as well, but that was not really our focus at the time, and this is sometimes the challenge, which is a good idea why you go blow by blow and clause by clause to address all the matters that you may not always have focused on initially. But we can't say that we've never heard about it, when in fact we have heard about it. And you know, on page 28, 29, so to speak, it does in fact refer to state running a lottery without licensing a third party. And yesterday there was argument to the effect, I'm not sure who here on the ANC was indicating, it possibly was the Whip, Honourable Khadebe, that this may even put the private sector on its toes, as it were. Because we haven't had the international people being contracted in as part of a consortium or whatever you want to call it to run things. And then the issue becomes each time there's just a tiny pool, a very small pool, the size of something you've got in your garden as a fountain, to access the skills because those skills have not been transferred, the technology. And this has always been the case. Please do this. It hasn't been done for as long as the lottery has started. So his argument then, which he put on the table, not myself, I'm simply repeating the substance of it, was that this could put the private sector on its toes. And if the government ran it, it's not talking about indefinitely running it. It's saying, you'll certainly get a warning. It's not going to happen out the blue. If you're running it properly, you know, there may be no reason there for government to step in because you are running it effectively in the manner in which it was intended, shall we say. But if you're not, it's all here. And the rationale is to allow the state to direct national priorities with full steam to needy areas, but also to allow the state to intervene in instances where a license is revoked. But as I say, it's for all the things, and I'm simply reading what is here and not from myself and repeating what Honourable Khadebe said. And I'm going to allow the Honourable Hill Lewis to make another input before the DTI, the DDG, responds.
Gotcha. I read that paragraph, and I actually searched through the whole document because I thought there must be something more substantial than that. Is that really the argument provided for a state lotto? Less than 20 words at the end of a document saying we want to be able to direct the resources full steam to the needy areas. I'm not sure if there's another area that I've missed in the document, another paragraph. But, Chair, that's not an argument. That's just fluff, actually. I want to just make two other points. The explanatory memorandum to the bill deals with the situation of the revocation of a license. So that argument is not even made in the explanatory memorandum to the bill. Secondly, what we have to keep in mind is that the state owns 20% of Kidani. So the state is already a major player in the South African lotto. 20%, if it wants to buy more, it's welcome to do so. But it hasn't. It owns 20% at the moment. So, you know, I would like to know what wants to be achieved here. What's the goal? Because no adequate argument has been made in that regard.
Is there anyone else who wants to comment before we shift across? Honourable James, followed by Honourable Pabasa. I'm looking at yourself, Honourable McIntosh, and the hand is not up.
No,
right.
No,
I'm just making sure I've taken account of you. Followed by Honourable James, Honourable Kwabasa, Honourable Waili.
On the question of the organ of state, this is obviously a blank entity. And I see no reason why an organ of state would be more efficient than the licensee. And I'd like to hear what this organ of state would look like. It would have to be created. Is it an existing organ of state? Is it some other organ of state? What is it? You cannot make an argument involving an organ of state without giving that organ of state some organizational sophistication and planning and design and so on. That's the first point. The second point is that I have not heard a compelling argument for why we want to do this. I mean, what is the compelling argument? Just to echo my colleague's great concern, that this could easily become a situation where the lotto is hijacked by whoever happens to run the national government of the day. And it's a very, very dangerous thing.
Thank you very much, Honourable James. Honourable Kwabasa.
I think that we have dealt extensively with this clause. I'm going to try and put a position as I understood it from the side of the ANC, that in the first instance we do not want to arise a situation where the operations of the lottery will be suspended because the license has been revoked for whatever reason as contemplated here. That's the first thing. The second thing is that clearly the minister is not simply going to arbitrarily withdraw the license. He's going to be informed by the situation as it arises, as is explained in the bill. What becomes important is that even when the licensee or the license is withdrawn, and the licensee stops operating and is substituted by an organ of state, the organ of state must run the lottery for a period of 8 years so that you don't have disruptions in between. And And at the end of that 8 year, or 2 years before the end of the 8 year period, an advert will be put out again for a private company to take over. If we follow the route that the DA is arguing, we stand a chance, a possibility of a lottery not running at a particular point and then disadvantaging the organizations and communities that must benefit from the fund. So let me put it simply. It's an 8 year period given to the licensee, agreed. But should circumstances arise that necessitate that the minister withdraws the license, and for purposes of continued operations, it is given to an organ of state to run the lottery. The license is given to the organ of state run the lottery. Let it be a full steam 8 year for the organ of state. So it's 8 years both ways, either way.
Whether it's a 2 year issue, which is currently there.
Yeah. That's the point I want to put forward. Otherwise, to sit in a meeting like this and continue to flog this point, and we're not getting to any meeting point, is going to be fruitless. Because at the end of the day, the committee will have to decide, and that's the matter.
I think you've also just added another point, that this one would need to ensure that both the previous point, 2 years, and this one is kept at 8, from what I understand, Honourable Kwabasa. Yes. Honourable Waili?
Thanks very much, Dr. Chairperson. I think a number of things have been covered by my dear comrade next to me. And we have been deliberating on this subject matter for quite some time. But I think our colleagues, in particular from DA, must be explicit. What are these hidden fears? Because we're dealing with hidden fears more than to deal with the substantive issues. Because there's a juxtaposing of the state and the private sector, that private sector is competent, is immune from corruption, and there are no bureaucratic red tapes. So I think that's a basis in which the argument of DA. But yesterday we reflected open and frankly that I want to repeat that private sector does not have God-given right. I've said yesterday.
No, look, he did not.
The Honourable Member did not interrupt you. Let's respect each other.
Honourable Member's putting words in my mouth, and I never said that.
No, but you'll have me. Look how you're just ignoring me now. You'll have the opportunity to mention that. If he has indeed done that, all right. We are listening. Now, we should defend your position. Honourable Waili.
What I've said yesterday is that there is this impression that private sector has got God-given right to do a lot of things, and there's always a perception that it is immune from corruption, from maladministration. We can quote so many examples. The recent case is the 2010 World Cup, where a number of companies inflated prices. And it's a corruption. But unfortunately, those people who were corrupt could not go to jail because they are from private sector. So I think one of the most fundamental issues is that we can't argue for the sake of arguing, because we've identified as to what are those areas where the state can revoke the license, but also what are those compelling reasons. I think we have identified some of those compelling reasons, and we have been trying to ensure that we reach a consensus on this particular matter, because it is not the intention of this government to paralyze the national lottery. Because there's this perception that if government intervenes, or the state, then there's a paralysis. I think our DG yesterday quoted a number of examples in terms of ITCA, how it is run on the basis of efficiency. I think we have been here. It reminds me one of the negotiations during the before 1994, one of the fundamental problems that led to the collapse of the other round during the negotiation was the issue of the bottom lines. Some of the bottom lines by the late Dr. Trienech were not in touch with a particular reality, and some of those bottom lines nearly plunged the country into crisis. So that's why we must unearth if there are any hidden fears, and some of these bottom lines, what is the rationale for some of those particular bottom lines? Because there are no compelling reasons from the Democratic Alliance that says the state organ cannot run a lottery, because international benchmarks have been given during the deliberations. So we're not doing something which has not been done in other parts of the world. And I want to conclude by saying, I think at a political level, you'd find that the African continent and some of the countries in the developing nations, they suffer from what is called the political sovereignty without the economic sovereignty, which is a fundamental issue. You govern issues artificially, but whilst the foreigners continue to control the entire lifespan of the economy. We can quote so many examples, but I think we don't have to take this debate to that particular level. But we want to ensure that the Democratic Alliance must reason with us, but also for the sake of ensuring that there's a progress on this particular matter. Thanks.
Honourable Waili, now, just came through the last hands, and that is the Honourable McIntosh, the Honourable James, and the Honourable Hill Lewis. I'm only allowing you very little space now. You've spoken at length, but you may just want to correct something, all right? Honourable McIntosh.
Madam Chair, the concern that I have with this is that the state doesn't actually run things as well as the private sector in general. And I'm not saying there isn't corruption in the private sector, there isn't corruption in the state. There's a good Zulu word, isono zetu. I mean, we are all affected by our human nature, which is not always beautiful. It's sometimes very greedy and very corrupt. Now, having said that, what one's concerned about is that one wants to have a situation where the lotto is delivered as efficiently as possible to the people of South Africa. And the responsibility of government is to put in controls, which it does through its licensing system, through the all kinds of ways. What is now coming in this bill is there's an organ of state. And the definition of an organ of state is that it's in Section 239 of the Constitution. I've just pulled up that section on the iPad, and it's very simple. It's any department of state or administration in the national, provincial, local sphere of government, or any other functionary or institution exercising a power in terms of the thing above, and so on. So it's fairly obvious what an organ of state is. But the question I've got, and Honorable Waile has partly let it slip, is that the states would like to have the option of controlling the lotto. Why? I don't think it's necessary. It's already been pointed out, the state already has 20%. And to me, I have the example always in my mind is the cell phone industry. If an organ of state had set up our cell phone industry, would we have anyway got anything as efficient and effective as we actually have in this country now with our cell phones? And my concern is this is a completely new thing. I don't think it's necessary. I think our lotto is running okay. I think if the minister and the board and the commission are doing their work, then we don't need to have this organ of state at all. In fact, I don't think it should even be mentioned in the bill, in my view, because they're perfectly good mechanisms using it, and it's purely for the efficiency. I think there is a real worry, though, for those of us who believe that the free market should be free to enterprise. And that is that when you start talking about an organ of state, people have very greedy eyes on the lotto. And it's my concern is that the lotto is individual citizens putting their own money at risk. They go and they take a bet and they hope to win. And I believe the state should stay as far away as possible from that, other than keeping a control on whoever manages the lotto. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you, Honourable McIntosh. Honourable James.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me begin with Minister Colin Shabani's department and the fact that there is an annual evaluation of departments of state and their competence. And at the bottom of the barrel, you'll see, by government's president's own admission and evaluation, that the Department of Public Works is not something you have any faith in. The Department of Social Development is equally bad. And at the top of the list, you see the Treasury. I have faith in the Treasury as a Department of State. And if you were to say to me that this organ of state you have in mind is Treasury, then I would feel less concerned about the issue, firstly. But secondly, which is a different point, is that for the state to direct the distribution of the lottery according to its assessment of what the national need is, as opposed to serving what the demand is in the overall society, in the civil sector, in the church sector, and so on, for the state to presume itself to know what it is that the society needs is not only presumptuous, but it's highly dangerous. So that's the first point I wanted to make. So just to say, you were to ask me which organ of state I would have faith in is Treasury. There are a few other departments that I would. My second point is, if you look at what Brazil does with the distribution of grants, the Brazilian government has decided in order to distribute social grants, it's not done through a state agency, it's done through a commercial bank. Banks distribute money effectively and efficiently, with great levels of accountability. Just look what happens to our social grants. Just check whether the list is accurate, whether the money gets to everybody in deep rural South Africa. It does not. There's serious problems with it. So the best answer, in my view, to this issue is to have a public-private partnership that involves an agency that combines a commercial bank with Treasury. That's the best answer to this issue. So that is a model, I think, that is a much better model to what is being proposed. We will vigorously oppose, as the DA, this idea that we should give a blank check to an organ of state without defining which organ of state that is, and to give it to the state body in its entirety. Because the danger there, there's nothing subterranean about this, the danger here is to have this presumptive, arrogant, all-knowing state body defining what the nation needs. It's utterly unacceptable. I think it's highly authoritarian, and it's a very tempting thing for a governing party to want to do that.
To run the lottery?
Chair.
Honourable Hill-Lewis?
Chair, I responded at quite some length yesterday to the suggestion by Honourable Waile that I believe the private sector has a God-given right to do this. That's not my view. I've never made that argument, and so I'm not going to respond to it at length today again, because he was there yesterday. Suffice to say, Chairperson, that the argument for a state-run lotto is not made in the explanatory memorandum for the bill. It is not made in this document, the policy document. In fact, Chairperson, the one paragraph you're referring to is contained in a section entitled Technical Amendments. It is not a technical amendment. It is a massive new policy proposal. It should be right at the top of this document. Instead, it's on page 32 of 38 under a section entitled Technical Amendments, and it's one paragraph long. That is not an argument. So, with the greatest respect to the gentleman, we've been presented with a massive new policy proposal for which there's no argument made. And the suggestion is made that we must make an argument as to why it's not necessary. With the greatest respect, we haven't yet heard an argument as to why it is necessary. So for that reason, I really oppose it. Secondary to that, it's also completely lacking in detail. As the other colleagues have said, we don't know which agency this is. We don't know who's going to head it. We don't know who it's going to be accountable to. We don't know how it's going to be structured. We don't know what's going to happen to the revenue. That's quite an important question. What's going to happen to the revenue? The billions of rands a year that this agency is all of a sudden going to be in receipt of. So, you know, we've been asked to vote for something fundamental with no detail, no explanation, and no argument in favour. I'm not sure what, I mean, it's a no-brainer to me, actually.
I believe we've given everyone extensive time. We're closing off with Honourable Kubasa, and then we're going to have to move to DTI. Yes, thank you, Honourable Kubasa.
No, Chair, I just want to go to the A-list document on page 4. Just after paragraph D, which says, after consultation with the board, appoint or authorize a person or organ of state, as the case may be, and then it goes on. Just that. And if I understand that well, it allows the minister to appoint a person, in which case I would understand it to mean probably an independent person outside the state who may be found to be capable of running the lottery in terms of the conditions as put down in the law. Failing which, then the organ of state would be authorized to run the lottery. Let's leave the 2 years and the 8 years for a while. So this dogmatic position to say that the minister will dogmatically appoint an organ of state if a situation that disallows the private licensee to operate is actually not quite founded. If my interpretation of a person is correct, I'm saying this because in a much earlier discussion when we started, it was explained that a person or a structure is not the structure of government nationally or provincially, and I would want to transfer that explanation earlier on to this, unless the department and the legal people here say otherwise. That's the first thing. The second point is that the issue is not about the 10% or 20% share that the state has in notary or whatever other share. Indeed, the state has the right to protect its share of the notary, like any other business. But the issue is not about this share or that share. The issue is, a situation arises when a private company can no longer continue to run the notary, and the state, the minister intervenes and appoint a person or an organ of state to run the notary. Even if it were the organ of state that is appointed to run the lottery, it would run the lottery in terms of the prescriptions of this bill. And I don't understand why the other nefarious issues are being raised, suspicions and allegations that are attached to all this argument that we are hearing. Finally, the point is that whether it's a person or an organ of state appointed, that person must run the full course. And that's our suggestion, must run the full course of running the lottery, the 8 years, so that you avoid the disruption. First of all, you ensure the continuity of the lottery operations. And secondly, you avoid the interruptions until you have found a suitable person to run the lottery. That's my argument, Chairperson. And I do want to say, let's keep the 8 years either way.
Thank you very much. Now, we've heard from all of you. We're now going to hear from DTI. Thank you.
Chair, I'll just allow the Chief Director here to say something, then I'll just conclude on what he's going to say.
No, thanks, Chair and the Honourable Members. I'm going to say that when we came to Parliament, the bill contained the clauses that clearly stated that we would like to cover the issue of the lotto if it is disturbed somewhere, the interim thing. And then again, the state itself will have to run the lotto if the conditions such as no procurement, local procurement, technology transfer. I think they are listed there. So we came with two issues. And then we are saying when we responded to the public, during the public hearings, because we, from my side, I would like to distinguish the two. Did we come with two issues here? The answer is yes. We can go to the answers probably. And then if you did so, did the public responded to these two issues? And then I'm saying on that day when there were public hearings, I still remember when, I still remember when we were put on the spot and then clearly stated, and the youth movement, one of the youth league or movement, they even said the function of the state is not to run companies, something of that sort, but the function of the state is to create conducive environment. And then we responded accordingly. The response was to say, no, the state is not just to go haphazardly and disturb these things. it will take into consideration whether there is a localized procurement, technology transfer, all those issues that the DDG said. And then we even said it is disturbing when you see members of the public or stakeholders coming only extracting the information that it suits their arguments. And then we said we are not here to mislead the state, the parliament. It's better to come with the following argument to say, has this issue been done in other jurisdictions so that parliament can take a sober decision? And then we gave examples of states that also run the lottery. And then we quoted China, or we quoted Australia, and then, like we said, here are the documents. We can also Google. So I'm only talking to the issue of saying, have we ever argued on the issue of the state running the lotto because of failure of all people who have run lotto before? There is nothing that we see in the change of technology transfer, empowerment of people. So the answer is yes, we have done that. So the issue now of yesterday, the principle is that the 8 years or 2 years, day before yesterday or on Friday, I said, let's forget about the numbers. It means, therefore, there was an appreciation in my head that the number issue is not so relevant. What is that issue is that can the state run a state lottery on its own, whether it's interim or it's 8 full years or whatever? I think we're justifying those. And then, therefore, yesterday again, we said it will be better now that you have listened to the department as a committee. You start to decide on those two schools of thought, whether the state should run or not run, because we have painted a picture. The DDG came with a policy, whether it's a paragraph or whatever, but it is in the policy. In the bill also, maybe on the A list, as an example, on the A list, the page 1, 3, on page 3, it says on page 3, blah, 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 constitution to instead establish solely to conduct the national lottery. As an example, on A list. On A list, where it says 1, red, 2, black, 3, black, and then you'll see that there is establish solely to conduct the national lottery. I'm just stating that all along we have been talking to the issue of the state running the lottery. And then maybe going towards conclusion, without going into the merit, because yesterday I even said the decision will be of the committee, but on the justification, judge our cases we presented them. And then the issue is that the principle needs to be emphasized that there are countries that are doing the same, and then South Africa also wants to have an empowering section to say if things are not working, I will be able to invoke and then go to this direction. That's what we are requesting here. We are not even saying that the RFP that is currently being decided upon, we will have to run the state lottery. We are saying it can happen after 8 years or 10 years or whichever period, but we think we have come with a justification, and then in other words, we are trying to, what is it, to quash this argument that we never argued on these issues. And I'm referring to the answer that maybe members may also want to see whether we have agreed on these issues. On the merit, I think from my side, the GDG may overrule me. If it is found, therefore, that we have argued, that's the end of the matter, if it is found. If it is not found, then it's another matter. So that's why I don't want to address the merit of the case. Thank you.
Thanks. I just want to just concur with what McDonald has been alluding to. We did make this case from the beginning when we came to this committee. I think the records of this committee will show that we did make that case. Chair, suffice to say that members did make their input in regards to this issue. And yesterday I did indicate even some of the inputs that were made by the Honourable Hay Lewis in regard to this issue, where he specifically indicated that we, therefore, if the state is going to be enabled to run a lottery at some point, then we must tighten up the grounds because they looked a bit loose at the time. So, Chair, I'm just confirming that we did deal with this issue, and maybe to the extent that it was perhaps not clear, I think we'd apologize for that lack of clarity, but to say that we have not addressed it, I think it will be incorrect, Chair. But Chair, I just want to to go quickly to some of the issues that were raised, and also just to give a sense of why this matter came here. McDonald has indicated this is not up to us. If the committee decides that they do not want to go that route, that's fine. But we are saying that this issue, we are putting it on the table. It is good and well for us to argue that the state should not run the lottery. And we must make it again a point that the state did choose to say there will be a state lottery, but we will license somebody to run it on behalf of the state. And that's how it's happening. So what this proposal is saying is that, in addition to that, because it's a state lottery, the state may decide not to license. It's like if I own an IP right, for instance, and I choose that I'm not going to exploit it myself, and I'm licensing McDonald's to exploit it and give me royalties. McDonald's can run it. I can license McDonald's. But that doesn't mean that I should not be allowed to exploit it when I feel like McDonald's is not exploiting it in the way that gives me better results. So this provision basically is saying that the state should not be forced, even in circumstances where the state believes that the objectives are not being met. And I know that there are proposals that have come through, Chair, which never came through before. I think Honourable Wilmont has indicated, I want to say the word in full, the name in full, Wilmont James, has indicated that, you know, maybe if it is this kind of a model, maybe we could agree to it. But that model has never been brought forward for us to say, okay, fine, let's look at how we refine it. This is only coming through today. But I think it's good that there are certain proposals that are coming through to say, if that's right, because we are only proposing in the legislation an enabling provision.
Yeah.
So if then the committee is of the view that, yes, maybe we can enable, but let them say how it should be, then that's the second discussion to be held. So we do appreciate that at least there's a consideration that it is a possibility to enable somebody that has a right to do something but has decided to license it to somebody else, that this person can decide to say, if it's not going in accordance with how I think it should go, then I can do it myself. Or I can appoint somebody else other than McDonald's. I can choose to appoint Stridom instead, you know? So there may be reasons why Stridom is preferred at the time, you know, because I would have weighed my options as well. So, Chair, I'm just making it in that way just to explain that this is what we were proposing, the enabling provision. But if then we need to then say the detail of maybe how it should look like and so forth, but Chair, you've alluded to it, and I think Honourable Gwabaza also alluded to the fact that it will still run it in accordance with this Act. And the terms and conditions, performance should be measured in accordance to that. And I think there isn't a change. But to the extent that there's a need to elaborate more on maybe how it should look like and so forth, That's another discussion. I think the committee can choose whether to have it or not. But Chair, I just want to also allude to the issue around the lottery. I don't know whether it's an industry or it's what, this thing. But I think what we are saying is that we should not create some artificial industry that does not exist. Because if there isn't any achievement of those objectives that we're talking about, this industry will continue every 7-8 years of that license. It will continue being the same. There won't be any development, in a sense that, you know, every year, every 8 years, there will be a new consortium with a new technology provider, and then they run, and then again they form another one, they bid again for the next, and there isn't anything on the ground. You can't put a finger to it on the ground. So we're saying that to the extent that this can continue like this, then therefore there may be a need for the state to intervene to now make it sure that this thing gets to be institutionalized in the country. It doesn't just continue to be an artificial industry that it is right now. And Chair, I just want to repeat some of the things that I said yesterday, just for purpose of clarity. If you look at, and I'm going to use the current operator just for the purpose of clarity. If Kidani, as an operator currently, doesn't get the license, and another operator is recommended, and Kidani takes the minister to court, and the lottery is interrupted, all right? The minister should be in the position to appoint somebody in the meantime to run the lottery. So, one, the minister has no choice, even if he's got the right to extend, because the lottery is not interrupted, they've not appointed. The extension would not work because the very same person that you need to be extending is the same person that you are fighting with. So certainly you cannot be extending that one. So you need an interim person in the meantime. That interim person also is unlikely to be the next company because somebody's going to be, but why do you choose that company? All right? So that is the problem. So that is the first thing. So in that case, a state organ can come in for the period of 24.
It's very difficult. I'm trying to listen to the DDG. I do want to just deal with timing and when we're going to meet again, but let's just allow the DDG just to finish at this point.
So that's the first instance, Chair, where even if you've got the provision for an extension, you can extend because the circumstances are such that you can extend. But you can also appoint because then your procurement process would not have been followed. So a state organ in that case for a period not exceeding 24 months is for that temporary arrangement. And then the second aspect is where, for instance, the procurement process has gone through, but then it is found that no suitable consortium or companies there. In that case, the minister can extend for a period not exceeding 24 months in order to rerun the bid. All right. And then the third aspect is where now the state, after looking at the industry and how it's been operating and looking and assessing the impact on the ground in terms of skills, in terms of local procurement and all of that, is of the view that these things are not satisfied despite all these years. And then the state may decide to appoint a state organ to run the lottery. So those are the three areas, Chair. So we're still on that point, and we just wanted to just make it clear that we have put these things on the table before. We have given the benchmarks. It is not about the state acquiring control. If we were proposing the state to acquire control, we would have done that in the proposal for the increase of the shareholding from 20 to 50 or to 51. But that is not where we were. We are recommending an enabling provision for the state to intervene. Chair, I think I will leave it at that just in the interest of time, but I think we have a lot to make if there's a need for us to motivate for more. But we think that the information is in the hands of the committee right now. We've provided as much information as we can on this matter.
No, thank you very much, DDG. No, look, a number of members have clearly just wanting a clarification regarding the time. Now, you will recall now, spent an hour on this. We'd spent an hour the other day. Now, I think we've reached a point where, as Honourable Kwabasa, I think, may have put it, you know, the matter is clear. It doesn't appear as if the ANC members in the committee, you see, I wanted Coke back here, but, okay, I do know exactly where the DA is on the position, I think I do, and that's certainly not the same position that the ANC is holding. I just wanted to clarify the position of Cope and the Freedom Front, who kind of recently rejoined us, as it were, and so one hasn't had the opportunity of clarifying that position. But certainly, just from the two parties on my right, there is, you know, it certainly seems that the difference is very wide apart, that members are nowhere near reaching a compromise here. But I want to put it to members who hold a different position to the ANC here, that in the first instance, and I must reiterate this, this was there to the extent that one or two submissions did comment on it. Now, they wouldn't have commented on it had it not been there, as it were. So I've asked for that to be completely clarified, you know, and because I don't think any of us brought the submissions here, did we? That's one issue. The other issue is, well, there is an allusion. It is here, and you say it's, I mean, we all got different page numbers, so I don't want to go on that kind of detail. But it is referred to in the policy document that was here. That's true. The third thing, what is the issue that is requested here? And I think the critical thing we need to focus on, do we or don't we want the state to have this enabling provision of an organ of state? That's what the issue is about. People are not even arguing about when there is an existing licensee and things have gone wrong. There is no hard argument from yourselves, the Honourable Wilmot James and Honourable James and Honourable Hill Lewis, on that particular one. There's some sort of understanding, well, if things are that bad, look, step in, by all means step in, you know, but keep it at 2 years or so. The argument is only hinging around the situation arising when we're not looking at that per se, but there isn't a suitable person or entity to license in this regard, for whatever the reasons now, but they would have to be serious reasons as noted here. Then we need an enabling provision in the Act for a state organ to take over for 8 years. That is the critical issue here. And I think I've spelt it out clearly. Honourable McIntosh, you were just out at that time, and I didn't want to misrepresent your views when I said the ANC are holding a position here, and that goes for the absent members. Well, the members not yet right now, and the DA are holding a position that is diametrically opposed in this particular instance. And I wasn't too sure that the Freedom Front would yet have developed a position, but you must have developed a position now on this point. Now, do you agree with the position that there is in the Act an enabling provision for an organ of state to take on the lottery or to be appointed to do this for a period of 8 years.
Madam Chair, my position is summed up. I don't think there should even be a mention of an organ of state. So I wouldn't even want that definition to even be there, and I don't think it should be there. I just don't think it's necessary.
Well, then that's very clear, the position. So we're not here to take a definitive decision here, as I'm sure you appreciate, that will be taken when we do the final consideration to go to the House, and you know, when we're doing the adoption process, as it were, within the committee itself.
When the ANC has a majority.
No. We are not at that process. I mean, we haven't even got a CREDA document, so it's not a question. Whenever we do get there, I know you're only making a little bit of a joke, but I always make sure we have got, of course, a full team. We wouldn't have started at that time without a full team. But I must say, we did have a situation once only. It was then the 18 years that I'd served as a chair in Gauteng and here, when I think it was the Cuban, remember when we had the funding?
Yeah,
when it was hung. It was the only time I have ever had to exercise my vote. Now, of course, I do reserve that right. But we're not there yet, and of course we're all very good political friends as such when we're in the committee. But can we just say, pardon, the quorum number itself is 7 to take a decision. Right. No, we're not taking a decision, you see. We were a quorum earlier on, but that's why I said we wouldn't have minutes. Do you recall that? Said we won't take time and have minutes. Right. But we corrated to start with, so let me leave it there. And we've tried to avoid little technicalities except when we are taking a decision. And I think somebody who reminded us of that importance was the Honourable Oriani Ambrosini, who certainly knew the rules and the Constitution. And since then, we've always been mindful of that. Thank you. Honourable McIntosh, I want to just make a ruling now. Yes, but carry on.
Just a question. Some of our members are not here because they're liking London exams. Now, I thought the policy of this committee and the DTI was that we must do local procurement. Why are they not writing South African exams?
No, it's a very simple exercise. As soon as we do have that curriculum here, we'll do so. But of course, you know, it's like saying nanotechnology. Can't we all go for that tomorrow? Well, I mean, are we in a position tomorrow? You see, we have to be practical, but I know that was meant more as an aside. All right, now I want to talk about timings. Yes, Honourable James? Nanotechnology. I don't know the physics of it. I can only give it to you in layman's terms that it is currently you're dealing with the smallest particles, hence what we had in Switzerland or wherever in a tunnel where when I went to school the atom was. We've since learned that there are five other particles far smaller than that, and that nanotechnology, that's what the Greek term is. It's now, well, look, can we just move out? Last time I really did physics was in matric. Now, time. On this, we're looking at a challenge. We've dealt with a lot of things. Honourable Kwabasa won't be here too. I'm trying to find out whether some members can stay after 2 o'clock. He won't be here. That's why I'm asking. Honourable James, will you be able to be here after 2? I'm looking at 2:30. Honourable McIntosh?
Sorry, are we, you mean it's 20 minutes time, too?
That's right.
So, do you want
after 2. 2:30.
Until 2:30.
Yeah, 2:30.
No problem.
Good. I do know Ms. Honourable Kwabasa's position, of course. Honourable Waili?
I'm having the meeting with some of the team that comes from the Premier's office in the Eastern Cape, and they will be rushing for the 4:30. The meeting should have started at 1:30. Yeah. Okay.
Will members allow me to make a call to Honourable Khadebi, who's chairing another minister of council? May I do that, please? I don't want to delay you unless we've got a member of the ANC with it. And that would not, I wouldn't be able to do that. And Honourable Khabaka has already submitted an amount to Lina.
We're going to carry on for as long as we can, so let's get started again. But before you do, I need to get an agreement here. I have discussed this with the Honourable Frohlich's office as well. We were scheduled to hold the BRRR on Friday. Thursday we were going to meet. As some of you know, there's been a plenary slotted in, so we propose to meet after plenary for 2 hours, and on Friday to meet at 8 o'clock until 10/11 on the LAB, the Lotteries Amendment Bill, followed immediately by the BRRR. The BRRR is going to take us 3 hours. So 11 to 12, 12 to 1, 1 to 2. That is what we are proposing Friday. And the Honourable Khadebi can make it. Honourable Waili was scheduled to be here for Friday. Honourable Khabaza, I think you said you could be here until 10. Was that the idea? Honourable James, you were going to be here for the BRRR, of course, which went until 1. Honourable Hill Lewis.
Chair, I need to leave about 1, just after 1.
No, that's what I'm saying. That was what the schedule was, yeah.
But I just want to check the meeting tomorrow night. Is that still going
ahead? The meeting tomorrow night at 5 until 7, or immediately after plenary. What? I mean, is there anything new?
No, is it tomorrow night?
Yes.
I thought maybe it was the DTI on its annual report.
Friday morning at 11. But we are meeting at 8 a.m. I'm saying that to everyone, whether you get taxis or what, then get the taxi from the parks at 6. Because that's what I have to do. I have to drive in at 6 to get here at 10 to 7. No wonder anyone else gets here at 9 because they've left at 6:15. But anyway, here we are. Can we then get right back in tow and see how far we go? So that's the position as we stand. Are we agreed? I'm looking at DTI. Now, the position on that clause we've been discussing and that issue is this, that there is a difference, you're not going to agree, you'll have to vote on it when we come to the end. All right? All right? We're moving on it. We're not going back to it. Right. Let's go pick up where we left off for that issue.
Madam Chair, now I'm lost. Can somebody please guide me to the last red portion?
Yes.
That we have dealt with, Madam Chair. Sorry.
It was page three, and we'd done page four, and we'd done page five.
I think it should be somewhere on
page six. Are we all on the red amendment bill, page six?
Thank you. Page six.
Thanks
for the guidance there, Madam Chair. Page six of the A list, item nine. Madam Chair, allow me just to refer to it. It's the same thing again. In fact, I think we've dealt with it. It's the functioning of the agency, and we've got the sequence of the words as we discussed.
Yeah, we've
consider,
done that.
Yes. On item 10 on page 16, in line 27, to omit, in fact, I think we've dealt with this one as well, because that led to the discussion then later on as how do we get to the payment side of things. Thanks, Madam Chair. With your permission, I go straight there. On page 16, after line 41, to insert the following section. This is a new section. It has not been part of the text at all prior to this morning. A decision of the agency concerning an application for a grant is subject to review by the board, provided that such review shall be adjudicated on by a board committee set up for such purpose without delay. Madam Chair, the rest that we're having in subsection 2 was in fact part of the previous A list, but we decided to keep it in red because it is linked with this new portion. There is the power of the board. What happens if the board overrules the decision of the agency? There are the two powers. In A, to tell the agency to re-evaluate the application, and in B, set it aside and impose the kind of decision that it would deem appropriate. So the only new portion is really sub 1. Sub 2 has been part of the text all along. Madam Chair, I go to clause 26, and I'm not running for the sake of time.
Just a minute, Honourable Hill Lewis.
There's not much of a committee. Thanks, Chair. I just want to ask, when you say subject to review, does that mean that per course they would have to review each decision, or is it only when application is made for review? And do we need to set that out?
Madam Chair, the DDC will guide me, but we discussed it just a while ago. The point has been succinctly made. Clearly, this would be where some applicant would feel aggrieved about the decision having been taken by the board, and then there would be a process for review. But we conceded, I think, this morning that Advocate Hercules has also left. But he also indicated... I've got no idea whatsoever, Madam Chair. But be that as it may, he also indicated that there might be a need in regulations to provide for some kind of procedure as far as this review is concerned. And unless the DD would indicate otherwise, on my part, I've got no qualms with that. In fact, it might be advisable to do so. So we concede to that extent, Madam Chair.
That would be very welcome, but let's hear from the DDG.
Thanks, Chair. Just to confirm that the discussion we had this morning, we did indicate that we proposed that there should be in the regulations that process, so that it's also transparent to the people outside. But Chair, also we had discussed the issue around the review, because it's a review mechanism, and that we will not say review or appeal. So it will be a review mechanism, so we'll propose the terminology of review throughout the bill. So that's in order, Chair.
Chair, I then move on. We're now getting very close to the end of our A-list. Clause 26, the only red portion. There we've got those words. Again, the sequence is incorrect. We will rectify the sequence. Clause 27, the very same thing. Just for the in fairness to the Honourable Hugh Lewis, who keeps on being in attendance here, on page 8 of the A-list, have a look at, just about in the middle of the page, more or less in the middle, there's the word, pay such grants. And then as we go along, we will find about 4 or 5 references to the actual payment of the grant. We discussed that earlier. Madam Chair, in clause 28, we have the very same thing again. Those words, we will rectify the sequence. The very same thing in clause 29, and this is where you, Mr. Lau, or where I seek your permission, not must, but seek your permission, to allow me just to say something on the last clause, which is new, which is clause 31. This relates also to a substantive debate that took place yesterday. It relates to the ministerial power. I'm not going to read, Madam Chair, allow me rather to speak. It relates to the ministerial power in respect of grants that have been made and are now being utilized or likely to be utilized in future for unlawful purposes or purposes which are inconsistent with the objectives of this Act. Now, yesterday, the period was also a bone of contention, the 7 days being changed from 7 to 14. The reason why the period was so short is that the existing ministerial power, this is now without the amendment, only applies up to the point where the grant is being made. But once the grant has been made, the minister would be left with the civil legal remedies in order to have the money, to claim the money back if there are unlawful purposes. We've now crafted this provision in such a manner that the ministerial power goes beyond the point where the grant is made. See how it reads specifically, Madam Chair, on page 10 of the A-list, clause 31, section 33, and then there is paragraph A. Is utilized. So that implies that the grant has already been made because the money is being utilized or is likely to be utilized in a manner that does not comply with the purpose or condition stipulated in the grant. And have a look at the very first words that we find in this new section 33. The minister shall at any time after receiving a recommendation from the board or information from any other person, might be somebody in public or coming from some organization. So, having crafted the section in this format, the issue of the period, should it be 7 days or 14 days, that has now become obsolete. It's no longer part of the discussion. And what is important, according to this, the minister will be able to exercise this power even after the grant has been made. There is no limitation as far as time is concerned. Madam Chair, having said that, that is the last red portion that we find in the A-list.
Right, Honourable Hill Lewis.
Chair, thanks. I like that. That's basically the section S. I just note that that tautologist's second statement is still in there. Yeah. I see you've noticed it at exactly the same time. Then, Chair, if I may, just go... Oh, no, we haven't got to the black yet. No, I'll stick to the red and then we'll go back.
I'll be all on track. I'm looking at yourself. You're happy there. Yeah. Honourable McIntosh?
Madam Chair, I thought this clause 31 is a good improvement. But in a sense, clause 31 partly links to page 6 at the bottom, where a distributing agency may review an application for a grant. Now, my concern is that people could say, and I think it was a concern, is that they've automatically got to review every grant, whereas
I think you could, by putting in substituting is at the last word in red on page 6, a decision of the Supreme Agency concerning application for a grant may be subject to review by the board. And clearly, if they review it and find it's wrong, they would then presumably send a message to the minister under Clause 31, who would then act on it. I'm just very concerned that somebody might say, well, the distributing agency has to review every application, whereas obviously the last page, 33, the minister can prohibit, withdraw, or reduce a grant, whereas the distributing agency is only, in a sense, on page 6, doing a review of an application for a grant. But I just think if we take out is and put in may, it does make it quite clear that the board does not have to review every application, because to me that could be the implication.
Just on that note, I thought that the issue was, we come to the end of this process, and that was the whole issue about the 14 days, how would it all fit, and we were told the 14 days had to be there because of the disbursement of the funds, etc. But this sort of thing is really enabling the board to do its regular job, if you like. The distributing agency is doing this adjudication, evaluation, etc. And that all of this, I suppose you could just have May, is going to be subject to the board, the review by the board. You don't want the minister having, been inundated with every single thing. The minister's one there right at the end is the last issue that may come up. That's as I see it. It's if something has slipped through this process, it's slipped through for whatever reason, and you still have that, last opportunity through the minister, the public, or anyone who communicates this, then looks at it. I don't know. I may have misunderstood the whole purpose there. But DDG, do you want to just address that point raised by the Honourable McIntosh? We did put your apology in earlier, Honourable Khajebi.
Chair, just there on page, is it page 7? Page 7. In terms of review. Yes. On page 7, I think when we were explaining it a few minutes ago with Advocate Stradom, was to say this is in relation to, this would be a process where an aggrieved applicant, can complain to the board for the board to review a decision. So in this case, it's where an application had gone through, was adjudicated, but the applicant is not happy about the decision, and they can then approach. But we are not, in this provision, looking to make it an automatic review of each and every grant that has been given, because that will just unnecessarily add a double process, which might prejudice the applicants, because it might delay also payment and so forth. So this is where an aggrieved person wants somebody to look at their matter, either because maybe documents were missing or whatever the reason it is. So this is the process. But the last one, which is like under Clause 31 in page 10, which was being addressed by Advocate Stradom, talks to where the grant now has been made, but the grant is likely to be used for the wrong reasons, and then that it can be stopped, it can be withdrawn, it can be reduced. So that speaks to that. So that power then is that power that then will be left with the minister. And then the board can recommend when they have information, and then they can recommend to the minister to stop, reduce, or withdraw such grant. So these are two areas, and would propose that they be distinguished in that particular way, in the same way that Advocate Stradom was alluding to.
Well, then the point that made by the Honourable McIntosh about the is and the may, I mean, it's always subject to the review of the board, isn't it? Whatever is done by the distributing agency, isn't it? It is always. So he was putting forward, why shouldn't it be May then? Yeah, and perhaps one of the advocates can just give a response to that, or the state law advisor, or Advocate Stradom.
Madam Chair, my colleagues will rein me in if they disagree. I hear clearly what the Honourable McIntosh is saying, but the words is subject to should not be read as meaning that the board must review. No, it simply means that it is subject to, if there's an aggrieved party, that party would be entitled to approach the board for a review. And the DGG, I'm not going to repeat it, I can't do it better than that, has already indicated we're dealing with two separate scenarios here. This is where somebody has maybe made the applicant, now feels aggrieved, the application feels aggrieved, approaches the board for review. The other one is totally separate, where the grant has been made, now we've got the unlawful purposes, so the minister has got the power to step in. I'm done on that score, Madam Chair.
The state law advisor.
Thank you, Chair. Just to add to what Advocate Stradom just indicated, is that it's also an empowering provision where the board is empowered to consider reviews in respect of decisions by the distributing agency. So it should be E. Yes, I'll retain E.
Josh, do you agree with that?
No, I'm done. Thank you. Just so that we're now finished with the red. Are we
agreed there? Completed the red. Now we're going back to the, just for the Honourable Kadebi, I didn't go to my meeting that I was chairing, because there was no one here. So...
Well, no, there were some really important people
here, but they weren't in the end. No, I mean, I do stand correct. Now, members, we're all on track. I know we've had so many revisions, you know, and therefore we may be a bit lost, all of us, but we're all on track on the 18th of September. Now, we've been in detail through the red, but as I now say page one, and I know, Honourable Hill Lewis, you often also focus on this due to some of your notes being made, etc., although we all make our notes. I want you... That's right. So I just want you to get the right document up now. So when I say page one, we're looking at the whole of page one.
Of the
A list. Yeah, of the 18th of September, the A list. Alongside, of course, the amendment bill, you know, alongside it. But this is the A list we're looking at. Page 1, clause 1. Clause 4. Page 2. Oh, yes.
Thanks, Honourable Chair.
It's in relation to, I think, when we went through the A list, I thought that clause 10(1)(r) that when we are removing that maybe it also has a bearing to 2A4 that I want to raise now. Hence, I didn't raise it at that time. It's in relation to the words in line
page
of the bill, Chair, page 3.
But we are moving from the A list first.
Yes, the B. It's on clause 4.
Clause 4,
yes.
Right.
Okay. In relation to saying the commission may, upon request by the minister board or on its own initiative in consultation with the board, solicit applications for grants from worthy good causes. So the issue there that I would want maybe the department to clarify and have to deal with is in relation to, is in particular the words solicit applications, because my understanding is that this clause in particular is intended to deal with proactive funding, where it was in principle to say without application you are able to make recommendations to the distributing agency through the commission. Now, when you solicit applications, it means you go out to those particular applicants and say, apply. Now, how are you going to differentiate between that particular application that the board has solicited, the commission has solicited from applicants, and ordinary applications in the category, for example, of charities? How are you going to, and isn't that going to frustrate that process? So, so my issue is there that maybe let it be clarified. If not, maybe let us not have that particular clause, because I thought that when we're deleting it there on 10(1) on 12(10), it was also supposed to be deleted there, because I think it also goes into that issue now of natural person, which for proactive funding we're saying it is going to frustrate now if you say natural person. So it also goes in there now, because if you want now to fund that particular outlet and you are saying solicit applications, then who becomes the applicant?
I think one hears the concern, and of course when it comes to the actual bill, it's page 3, am I correct? Page 3, and it's line 40. Am I right? Was everyone on track? Yeah. No, I think we must just get our heads around that for a moment, because it is in relation to proactive, the proactive approach now, am I right? And you're raising it, Mr. Sapela, because as you're indicating, on the one hand, you're not too sure if the application is solicited, the minister does it, or the board does it, or the commission does it, it solicits an application from a charity, let's say. Then, who is the applicant is your question. Now, I think the DTI could just clarify that, and then we'll discuss it, deliberate. Is that all right? Yes. Your DDG?
Chair, I think Advocate Stradom will explain the provisions, but I'm just explaining the principle here. In now putting together the functions of the commission in terms of what it will be doing, you will notice that in three, on page three of the bill, line 35, there we talk about that is where the proactive funding is provided for. The second aspect talks to where invitations to apply are made. So that will be where it says solicit, is a general, it's a call that invites people to apply. Yes. An advert or something. So that's why it was, I think in the A list there's an amendment where we're just adding in a prescribed manner or something which talks to it will be a call or it will be an invitation. So it distinguishes between those. So it doesn't introduce any new requirement.
So the one we've even amended to say a prescribed manner, this one is a general call. Are we all happy with that? Honourable James, you don't look happy.
Chair, how can I put this? I served on the board of the Ford Foundation in New York, and we used to distribute $600 million a year. And there were two categories of grants. The one is people who would apply for money, and the other would be solicited grants. Solicited grants are not, solicited applications have a different status in an organization that makes a decision about grant making. So if the minister would specifically invite somebody to apply, by virtue of the fact that the minister does it or a member of the board does it, it gives a different weight and different standing. And you could possibly sit with a situation where you can exhaust an entire budget through grants that were solicited by the members. And so what happened at the Ford Foundation is that they were ring-fenced, so that X amount of the budget, half the budget is spent, or 80% of the budget is spent on unsolicited grants, and in 20%, I mean, there's a real risk you can crowd out churches, for example, and so on and so forth. I just want to raise that as an issue.
Learned. I mean, you know, solicit. I suppose, you know, solicit has got such a broad term that in this instance, under four, it can even amount to an advertisement. And of course, we do want advertisements to go out there and let people know you can apply. You can. You know, and who would put that would come under a commission, a board? I don't know. You see what I'm saying? Or the minister in a speech, for example, talking about this and on at the lotteries, and then say, "Well, you know, you can apply for this. Isn't that soliciting an application?" Yes, Honourable James.
The meaning solicit is a very specific meaning. That is to say, for example, the minister believes, together with the board, that a particular organisation that can provide a particular intervention to dealing with HIV should, in fact, apply, and brings. You know, a solicit. That is advertising is just a general advertisement. So that's what I mean.
The word invite. Has that got the same term as solicit?
No, invite's better.
I mean, as I said, solicit has even got a very negative term. Yeah. Invite. That's a good one, yes. I think that's why we don't have that term in South Africa. It's only in Britain, isn't it, when you have solicitors. Perhaps we can amend that to invite. Is it really going to, it's going to actually make it very clear. Well, thank you for that. You know, even though I did use the word invite, but I mean you alerted it to a parliamentary legal advisor and yourself with a note on what solicit means. All right. Can we move then? And thank you for that, Mr. Sapello. You picked it up. You must have been burning the night oil. Yes, sir, DTI. Advocates Tridham, I'm calling now. Have you finished with that word?
No, I've never had the privilege in my life to be solicited, but you never know what might happen in the future.
All
eliciting anything. Here, three. Clause 4, page 2, clause 5. Just a minute, do you know this issue of financial and the disbursements, you're going to come back with that, am I right? Or did you agree? It was raised by the Honourable Hill Lewis. We agree on there?
Then we also refer to those provisions where we have the explicit references to payment being made by the Commission in about 5 different places, which is part of the A-list, Madam Chair. I think we've dealt with that.
Okay, so we did. I just haven't ticked it off. Right, so that's dealt with on DDG.
No, Chair, I just wanted to say on that page, it's only that amendment or correction that we need to make with the initial 5 years.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, not exceeding 5 years. Yes.
Okay. Now we go to page 2, clause 6. Clause 10. Okay. We're on the A list, page 3, clause 10. But also keeping an eye on the bill itself, you see. Page 4, clause 3rd, yes, DDG?
Okay, I just wanted to find out, on those things where we agreed that we'll make corrections, whether we should point them out as we go, or we assume that we...
Well, just if I've overlooked that,
okay.
Because I have indicated here under clause 10,
yes.
That there was just something,
yes,
we needed
on
to...
On the shall and,
yes,
and the discussion.
And there
made.
I have got that, but let's just clear it with everyone. It's on the shell, etc. We're coming back on that one. That's there. Clause 12, page 3. Page 4. Clause 13. 13B. Page 5. Clause 15. And then clause 22, we were just noting we were making reference there to the principal act under that 3. Clause 24, now for some reason I've got a cross here. Yeah, the 9. And the clarification we received. Yeah. Page 6. And may distribute grants. I've got a note here, that would be on page 6 of the A list on your amendment 10 proposal on page 16 in line 27. Why have I got that? 627. Oh, we've just been through all of that, thank you. And then we go to page 7 of the A list. We've just learned all about aggrieved applicants and clarified review. And then we said, no, we'll keep is. We'll keep the word is there. And then clause 26. Page 8. Clause 27. Clause 28. All right, clause 27. Now, I'm glad that this Honourable Hadebe will recall when the Honourable Tim Harris was here. And then at the end of the bill, well, I got totally lost. Can we go back to page? I said, no, we're not going to do that again. Do you remember that? At least we stopped immediately now. On page 8, clause 28. Page 9, still on 28 at the top of the page. And And you'll see these are all the same ones, Honorable Khadebi, and that was explained from yesterday, clause 29, the same one. And the bottom, clause 30. And then... track there with page 9, clause 29, we said it was okay. Honorable Hill Lewis?
It says, in respect of any allocation awarded for a specific good cause which the board pays over to the commission. Can you just explain that to me?
All right, are you on clause 29?
No, clause 30.
All right,
of page
clause 30,
nine.
Right.
Point one, it says, in respect of any allocation awarded for a specific good cause which the board pays over to the commission. Can you explain that? Can you explain that to me?
And to substitute the commission in consultation with the board may.
Do you understand the point?
Yeah, I've got it, but we're just awaiting a response. Are you all there? Everyone there? We all there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jatham, do you think you have it?
Hey, Madam Chair, I'm fiddling with papers here and they're moving all over the place, but be that as it may, this is an amendment to a current provision in the Principal Act, if I may refer to that. It's for the members who have the benefit of the Principal Act. It's Section 32, which is the section that stands to be amended by this provision that the Honourable E. Lewis has referred to. The Minister, I'm reading it as it is in the Principal Act now.
Section 32.
The Minister shall, after consultation with the Board, in respect of any allocation awarded for a specific good cause, which the Board pays over to the distributing agency. And the amendment now says that that payment should not be made to the agency any longer, it should be made to the Commission. So the notion or the principle is not new. It is here in the Principal Act. It's simply being amended to that extent that the payment no longer goes to the agency, but in line with all our discussions as far as the functioning of the agency is concerned, it now goes to the Commission.
Yes.
And it relates to the good causes notion as well.
Chair, no, I understand that point of it. I mean, it should read commission, but I just don't understand why the board would pay it over. Because the board, the commission is the one that holds the funds and pays it over to the recipients.
Now, if you have a look at the chart.
I mean, that chart now has been very helpful.
See,
give me the chart, please. Let's have a look at yours.
Oh, is it from the trust fund? It's from the trust fund to the commission. Right.
See, that's why this is very helpful.
contract there. Okay, page 9, clause 30, and then page 10. We continue with that, of course. Yes, Chief Director?
No, thanks, Chair. On is clause 31, eh? Yes, clause 31, the red one, 33, A and B, we discussed this issue, but seemingly we forgot to propose an amendment. I'm on B now, where Honorable Louis Lewis said there is a tautology, let's take out this issue of all purpose. So we are saying let's take it out as granted, but let's put in the following words, or without authorization. Authorization.
Utilized for an unlawful purpose. Or without authorization. Prohibit, now you've still got the rest of this. Prohibit, withdraw or reduce. Okay, now that takes us to the end. Yes, Honourable Hill Lewis, followed by Honourable James.
In examples where grants are paid out in several tranches, does this clause, if for example the first tranche is paid out and information comes to light that that first tranche is being misused under this clause, does this allow, does the wording here adequately allow this further tranches to be stopped? Because you see it says prohibit a grant, but that in that case the grant's already been made, only the first tranche. Withdraw, I suppose maybe under withdraw, or reduce, withdraw.
DDG?
Yes, Chair, it is accommodated under withdraw. It's one area that we discussed this morning as well. Yes.
So all the tranches are covered. Right. Okay. Now, we're, you know, there are one or two areas which you still need now to clean up, and sort of fine-tune it, as it were. And I think what is also very helpful, you've got this A list, which is going to come and relates to the amendment bill here. Okay. And, you know, it would just be useful as we would be looking through that A list as well, where when the principal act is involved, you would be more familiar with that than ourselves. On a quick look-see, it may be helpful here and there just to put it in brackets or something, you know, or to alert us, because you've seen about three questions today for clarification. We're just coming out of where is this, and we weren't too sure. Let's not have that impediment cropping up again, so that we're all clear on where we are. Now, we've had green, we've had red now, and we're now going to black with what color? Blue. You know, anything that you now change to come in blue. Is that a nice bold color?
Yeah,
all right. Now, wait a minute, where are those things? Now, there are two other things. It's in relation to when we are meeting, and that is in relation to tonight, just to relax. That's what people are having a heart attack. Thursday, we all know what the challenges are. We're going to have to meet immediately after the House rises. And if from my whip any idea when that will be. I'm looking at a pink list. Let's hope it's a relevant list. 20th September, Thursday. There are member statements, legislation, how long? Committee reports.
Member statements,
45
minutes.
80, call it, yeah. Mm. And then committee reports. So 8 and 4 are 12, 120, that's 2 hours. And then committee reports. So maybe it's starting at 2, huh?
We have one at our committee.
I was
going to
say 1 hour.
Yeah.
Can
I have
yes, of course, of course. No, I had forgotten I had to bring it in this morning, you know, to give to the worker. And no doubt you spoke eloquently on it. Right. So, Honourable Khadebi was in strategy. And what timing was that? For that member's bill, for the report. It's just a report. Yeah, it's just a report, isn't it? Declarations, yeah. All right, 4:30. So, can we say immediately after the House or 5 o'clock? You know, whichever comes soon. Immediately after the House. 4:30. Yeah. All right, 4:30. 4:30, 5:30, 6:30, 7:30. Let's aim for just 3 hours. 7:30. Are you going to be awake on the other side? Yeah. So that's tomorrow night. Then when we come to Friday, and we've done some changes there, we're starting off at 8 on Friday. And we're going until, you know, 10:30, 11 with the bill, the lab. And then we're starting with the bill until, it, you know, 1:30 or so. 2, some people are leaving at when? Just when was it? 1:15. Honourable Khadebi? No. Who else? But you said you're here the whole weekend. Yeah, thanks, Honourable McIntosh. No. And this Friday?
I'm here on Friday.
That's right, the whole weekend. So, Honourable James doesn't have a problem either on Friday.
Friday.
So we can even go till 1:30. Yourself, Honourable Khadebi?
I'm okay.
All right. I'm okay. Honourable Kwabasa can be here with us till 10. That's why we've positioned the bill first. Okay? Now, what does that mean? We're going to get a cleaned up version Thursday night, which we hope to have with us physically at 3 o'clock. Physically. I hope to have a copy at 3.
1,500 hours.
1,500, thank you. And then from that time, then we are actually going to take the main... the amendment bill and just take it alongside now, this one. We're going to have to go through here. Okay? That's the amendment bill. And just alert us to the A-list. From, that is to Thursday night. Then on Friday, what are you doing? The in-principle agreement clause by clause. In principle. So we may virtually reach that on Thursday night. Do you hear what I'm saying? We may have reached that. So let's see how things are going then. See how Thursday night goes. But we must have cleaned up bills here. Totally cleaned up. And we have Honourable Khadebi.
Chairperson, I see that when coming to PRR reports, there are a lot of entities we have invited. Are we cancelling some of them out? Because when I asked the powers that be, they said that we can even get a date during constituency period. There's no problem about that.
They told me no,
you see. No, no, we can, Chair. We can get a date because I'm very afraid because when coming to the issue of the VRR, we're speaking about money itself and the other oversight because we cannot do the other at the processing of bills at the expense of the oversight of the entities. That's why what I'm suggesting, Chair, is that a day already communications committee has been given 2 days during next week. It has already been allocated 2 days. So if needs be,
well,
rather than cramming everything into.
You see what we've done? Our big issue is the CRISA. CRISA is a 3-day process. That's the issue, really, that we face. Now, if we finish Thursday night, if we're able to finish Thursday night, and then it means if it takes the CRISA on Friday. No, I think if we finish Thursday night, we would take it Friday morning. Right. Well, we don't want it to be too late. There's no need to hang on to it. Now, the thing is, when we get clean of that week, on Monday. Now, it seems that the problem is people are writing exams and we need a full house on Monday. And you know that. Tuesday, Monday, and Tuesday, and Wednesday. So the earliest we can meet to do that is the 3rd. The 3rd of October is the 3rd and the 4th is the Friday. So there we are. And Friday, we were going to have the DTI and who else? As you see, I've got to manage both of those bills. And I need all members here. I need the DA here, I need COPE here, I need the full A committee here. And we need people here in the house. Are you going to be here Thursday night?
Yes, I am. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But you see, that can be done then. And that frees you up then.
But Chair, you see, if we only have 2 hours, okay, if we finish on Thursday night, that's one thing, but if we only have 2 hours on Friday for BRRR, then I'd suggest we only have DTI in those 2 hours because that's the biggest and it's going to take the longest one. You know, I mean, they're
It's going to be, sorry, from 10 to 11, 11 to 12, 12 to 1, 1 to 2, 4 hours.
Just DTI for 4 hours.
With lab at 8.
Yes, you said until 11.
Well, I see now if we make good moves on Thursday night,
yeah.
We virtually all we're going to do then is to adopt or disagree. Do you know that process? In principle. Because you've got to get the CRISA bill to do that final one. So when you do the Friday morning for 2 hours, it's going to be subject to a few problems occurring with CRISA. That's what I'm saying. And the position now that the Speaker has put forward is that your final, you know, a report can only be adopted and bills taken through on the CRISA. And that's an adamant about. There have just been too many challenges here. So I'm suggesting the CRISA is then done on the 3rd or the 4th of October. The CRISA copy.
When are we
going to
do
BRRR
next
year? No, we're starting off with 4 hours on Friday.
No, we have to finish.
DTI we will.
Yeah, but the other...
And then the other entities we're going to do the 3rd. We've got 2 days, the 3rd and the 4th.
Right, so we'll be CRISA on Monday and the DTI.
Yes, and the CRISA then will take 1 hour. Can't you see? Because it'll be clean. You know what the CRISA looks like. It's not a long bill.
You hope it will take 1 hour. You don't know what you're
going to have. No, but the thing is... look, you will have your amendments in writing. All right. Okay. Can we agree on the 3rd and the 4th? And then prepare your treaty. And then Thursday night, Friday, we know where we are. You agree coming to me. Can we close off? It's not been on tape, by the way. It's just been a friendly discussion.
A meeting has adjourned.